Welcome to the show, where we hope to see you readied and equipped to be outwardly fruitful and inwardly filled by the Spirit of God for whatever work He may have for you. In this four-part series, we've aimed to describe what a community of honor is. We've contrasted individualism and identity. We've explored first century gospel communities. We've surveyed how Scripture defines the concept of honor. And today, we'll end by describing how we put honor into practice. In this episode, you'll hear me, Johnny White, and Chris Hiddle. We're pastors and instructors at the Northridge School of Ministry. And before we begin, we want to give a little review before we jump into how to practice honor. So Chris, could you start us off?
I would love to. This might be a little technical, but in order for this to work, I think we really need to agree to three perspectives before we move forward.
Okay.
We need to accept that we are all made in the substance, image of God. We are all made in the purpose of God, His agency. We've been given decision-making power. We're all made in partnership with Him by His support. And this is all demonstrated to us at creation and by Jesus' work on the cross.
It's a mouthful, but we've got it.
Yeah. In a nutshell, we are all made in the image, purpose, and partnership with God. So number two, we all need to accept that the community Jesus envisioned for us was bound by strong group dynamics that had benefits for those that wanted to be part of the group.
I remember the challenges we had.
Yes.
But we got there.
We did. And the last thing we need to accept is that the relational template for those obedient to Yahweh are defined by honor and preference to living in contempt towards one another.
Yes.
Now, if everything we just said is acceptable, then it really begs us to ask, how are we going to use our decision-making power with the Lord's partnership to treat those who are made in His likeness? So when we consider the Old Testament and the New Testament pictures of God's judgment, His attitudes and the actions of contempt, like seeing others as less than or using our free will or our power to penalize, criticize, punish, or shame those who have wronged us, we need to understand that these are not congruent with the will or character of God or who He's called us to be.
Right.
His call to us instead is to trust His judgment and extend forgiveness and grace to those who are near to us.
That's good stuff.
Now, as we shared in former episodes, honor being the act of seeing another as they are seen by God and worthy of sacrifice, this is going to require us to treat them as righteous before God, which can sometimes be difficult, and use our decision-making power from God and divinely supported by God when conflict inevitably will arise.
Especially when conflict arises, right?
Probably especially, because it will arise. And that's most certainly the best place for honor to be.
Right.
So we see this in the Old and New Testament. When God rescues His people, He especially honors them in circumstances that allow for them to change and provides resources for them to change.
So where do we see that?
Well, some examples would be Genesis 33. We all know the story of Jacob. He lies to his dad to steal his brother's blessing.
Right.
Well, later in that story, Jacob actually blesses his brother after stealing his blessing, and his brother receives him back.
That's good.
Then a little bit later in the Old Testament, we have the story of Daniel. We got the Jews going into exile in Babylon, and those same Jews actually find favor in God's eyes during the Babylonian exile.
Mm-hmm.
So even though God allowed them through His wrath to find themselves in exile, He still blessed them in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew 9, we see Matthew, who's working for the sinful and corrupt conglomerate of Rome. He's tax collecting for them. Well, Jesus looks at Matthew and He says, hey, you can still follow me.
Wow.
And Matthew is able to say goodbye to his old life and pick up a new one with Christ.
Wow.
And then, of course, literally every single epistle that Paul wrote is an exhortation to the early church to live as the Holy Spirit enabled them, because most of them were not. So the question then is, Johnny, is how do we practically see people as God has made them and allow them to make decisions that may or may not benefit us?
So that's a huge question that we're going to attempt to answer today, right? How do we trust and believe the best of those who may have wronged us? as maybe another way we could look at this, right? So last week you kind of began to mention a book that we could look to. The author is Danny Silk. It's titled Culture of Honor. He gives us a tool. And so we definitely want our audience to grab the tool, the resources that we've provided, because we do this for your growth and development. We want you to engage with it.
Yep.
So take a moment, pause this, and go grab that resource.
Perfect. Well, as we jump into this tool, the way that I think would be best for us to really approach it is to look at each of the points in the tool, kind of read through them, give them some definition, and then we'll try to provide some examples. The way to start, though, I want to start with a quote that Danny Silk gives in his book. He says, "If you are face to face with a person who feels compelled to self-protect, then you're not talking with that person's identity, but you're instead talking to his or her survival tactics."
Wow. So I think that we need to say that again and dig into it a little bit.
Yeah. So if you are face to face, is the quote, if you are face to face with a person who feels compelled to self-protect, then you are not talking to that person's identity, but instead you're talking to their survival tactics. So to like shorten that, when someone is in conflict and they feel defensive, you are not talking to them as a person, but you are talking to their method of protecting themselves as a person.
Okay, so maybe the walls
that
they create around themselves to insulate and protect. So we're not actually getting through to them. They're not hearing us.
No, not at all.
Wow.
Yep.
That changes things when we acknowledge that before we get into a conversation.
Yeah, because when we go into a confrontation with someone and they're defensive, nothing constructive anyway is going to happen until the defenses come down and there's two parties looking at each other saying, let's be peaceable and work for a solution.
Okay. So we need to look at one of the tools with this quote in mind, right? So we need to choose to be honest.
Yep.
And that means like with our own feelings. Not with like what we think that the other person, based on their behavior or even their words, right? So offense is going to grow contempt, right? So then we withhold truth to try to create control, and it actually reduces the ability to be vulnerable.
Yeah, and that I think really speaks to week one when we are looking at someone as I'm an individual, they're an individual, and not being made both in the image of God, we're going to look at them most likely with contempt. Like, they're not agreeing with me, so I'm offended, my walls go up, they sense my offense, their walls go up, and now whoever's cannon fires the hardest is going to win.
Right. That makes sense. So that's why I have to look at my own feelings before I go into a conversation.
Yes.
And then I also need to go, hey, what is my goal? Do I have a clear purpose in actually entering into a discussion? And even like, is this the right time?
Yep.
I may need to press pause and be able to answer those questions and say, what do I hope to accomplish with this conversation, and identify that even before I begin the conversation.
Yeah, and I think it's important to identify feelings.
Okay.
Like, if we're going to be honest, we also need to be honest that most of us don't feel very well. I know a lot of people, when I'm in confrontation with them, they say things like, well, I feel like you're coming against me.
Okay.
Well, they're actually not feeling like... You don't feel coming against you. Like, you don't wake up in the morning.
That's not a feeling.
Yeah, you don't wake up and you're like, oh, I feel a little coming against me today. Like, you don't feel that. That is what you're thinking.
Okay.
So
there was a feeling before that thought that precisely. We have to put our finger on.
Yes. So because I have been a hot mess of person, I've been in counseling. And my counselor at one point told me there are some core feelings. There is mad, sad, glad, excited, fearful, guilty, and I think there might be a seventh one. But for now,
afraid?
It's just...
Afraid? Did we do afraid?
Fearful.
Fearful, weird.
Yeah, mad, sad, glad, excited, guilty, afraid. Maybe those are just the six.
That's not very many.
No, but of course, like, there's other adjectives you can put on that. I feel morose. Well, morose is feeling sad.
Okay.
Like, I feel grief. Well, that's also a sad emotion. Like, mm-hmm. I feel frustrated. That's anger. So we can give some great vernacular uh-huh. to our emotions, but we need to identify what is an emotion and what's something you're thinking about a situation. Does that make sense?
It does.
So I think those are some of the best places to start. But then you also have to step back and say, okay, this is how I'm feeling. How do I hope to move forward and accomplish something different? Mm-hmm. And whatever you're thinking about accomplishing, sometimes you even have to wonder, like, is that realistic? Like, can I really accomplish this in this conversation? I think, like you said, like, taking time to say, is this the right time to have this conversation? But having a finger on what am I feeling and what am I hoping to accomplish is a great way to begin a confrontation.
Okay. And we have to actually know those things before we ever begin to speak.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're looking at a map, that's point A. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't know where point A is, you don't know where the journey is going to start or end.
Okay.
So number two would be, we need to learn to clearly and responsibly communicate. And this is all part of that starting line of choosing to be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not choosing to be honest about where you're starting, you're not going to clearly or responsibly communicate. Because you're just, well, I'm just going to make it happen. I'm just going to go at it. And you're going to jump into something before you're ready.
We're probably going to say things we regret.
Yes.
Or that maybe aren't even necessarily true.
Oh, yeah. Yes. There's
from my experience.
I've heard there's like three P's. Like, sometimes when we're in a conflict, we say things that are too permanent, too pervasive. And I'm forgetting the third P at the moment. But like, we say things that we don't really mean.
Yeah.
So what we need to do when we go into a conversation or a confrontation is to start by saying, this is how I feel. Or make maybe observations of what you see happening. And this could even include noticing some like natural consequences. Like, hey, I feel mad when you cut me off. When we're talking, I would like to feel glad about what I'm saying because I have freedom to say it before you stop me.
That's good.
Yeah.
So ultimately, when we can identify our feelings, it gives us then the capacity to clearly communicate with the other person, this is what I'm feeling, mm-hmm. which actually keeps us from being adversarial or attacking.
Yes, because it then, yeah, it becomes less about, you know, I feel like you always cut me off. You never let me say what I want to say. I don't feel like I have a voice in this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can hear in that tone, they're obviously mad. Maybe they're afraid. But they've never confessed what they're feeling. They've never taken ownership for their starting point. And if you don't know where you're starting, you don't know where you're going to end up.
That's good. That's really good. Is it important to, when as we like describe that, I think sometimes we try to, like, there has to be a measure of resolution, right? Mm-hmm. That extra question of, like, we're expressing it like, hey, I feel afraid. When you don't allow me to fully express myself.
Yeah.
But I have to admit my fear, right? And then, like, I want to be unified with you in this situation, but I feel like something's in the way.
Yeah.
What do you think that could be? So, like, asking that question and causing the other person to begin to think about that differently.
Yeah.
Is where clear communication can take us.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to like look at that, because what that says is, hey, I'm on a map. Are you at the same point that I'm at? Like, do you see what I'm seeing? And I know I've been in some confrontations before where the person I'm thinking of will come to me and be like, hey, I just have some observations to make. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with them?
And what does that do?
It allows us to, again, like, actually move forward. We're no longer at a starting point. We've now moved forward on the map to say, like, oh, we started in Toledo. We made our way to Indianapolis. Like,
okay?
We're now at the same place. Yes, we both see that some of the things that you're seeing are the things that I'm seeing. And that is a really helpful way to move forward in a confrontation.
So you're kind of allowing this common ground to happen.
Yeah.
But sometimes maybe things don't happen quite like that. So we have to move on to number three.
Yes.
Right? Because sometimes it can be messy. Mm-hmm. And we have to allow people to clean up their own messes. Sometimes it's not a quick fix. And we have to remember that we all have agency.
Yeah.
We all have the ability to choose for our own self. And what that means is others have that same ability.
Yep.
And so we need to give them the space and the privilege to recover from their mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way in which to do this is to remind them of who they are, right? Their identity, and actually separate their identity and their actions.
Yep.
Right? So you're not what you do. This thing that you did is not the whole of who you are. And so I can call you, this is who I know you to be, but this is what you did. And those things are different.
Yeah. Before we hit record, you said like, it's helpful in confrontation to see people as they are, not as what they've done.
Yes.
And I think in some of the situations I'm thinking through right now in my life where I've made some real unhelpful decisions for myself and for others, it would have done me a world of good to be having a conversation with someone where they saw me for who I am, not for the mistakes that I'd made.
Absolutely. And that's an honoring action. And moves us forward, as we were talking about. Yeah. Where were we going? Not Toledo. We started in Toledo.
Yeah, we're in Indianapolis. Let's try to get to Chicago.
Okay, we're heading towards Chicago now. So the idea is that we need to ask people strategic questions instead of answering for them.
Yep.
We don't fix the mess for them. We need to ask some questions. And so what could that look like?
Yeah, I think some questions that we could look at would be like, hey, if we both agree on what the problem is, because that's really, I think, sometimes when we make those observations, you're identifying the problem. You're being honest with your feelings. You're communicating what the main issue is. And when you've identified the problem, you're able to say things like, well, what are you going to do to fix this? Or how do you plan to repair what's been broken? Something that I've just noticed in my life, and you kind of alluded to this, is when we present a solution for someone without giving them any decision-making power, that feels more like a punishment than it does a solution. Like, you know, if you and I were in the parking lot and you hit me with your car and I told you, well, you're going to have to pay for this. You're going to have to take on the consequences of this. You're going to be responsible. Those are real punishing conversations versus like, oh, Johnny, like, I know you didn't mean to hit me. Like, I'm really kind of frustrated by this. I'm angry because I already had a dent on the other side of my car. Right. Now I've got one on both sides. Like, is there a way that you could see this getting repaired?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's inviting a conversation about something that is a conflict.
Absolutely. So the idea of allowing someone to clean up their own mess is an honoring solution that allows them to be who they are and to take ownership.
Yeah. And I've said it this way with some of our students before, like, if we think of it, Danny Silk uses this bucket of paint analogy, like, if a student or somebody is responsible enough to pour a bucket of paint or splash a bucket of paint or drop a bucket of paint someplace and they make a mess, then they're probably responsible and powerful enough to actually clean it up. Because we all make decisions. We were talking about choices earlier. Like, we're all able to make choices. Those choices can lead us to dysfunction, but we can also make choices that lead us to function, to flourishing. And I think when someone maybe makes a decision that leads them to a dysfunctional place, it'd be a pretty helpful thing to not only teach, but and show them, like, hey, you can make good decisions.
Absolutely. That they're able to accomplish that. Not because someone else told them or tried to control or manage the situation, that they had a part.
Yeah.
They had partnership in it.
Yeah. And in that too, you know, there are circumstances where people are uncomfortable because, well, no one's ever given me this sort of decision-making power before.
Right. They don't know what to do.
Yeah. Like, some people have grown up in families where, like, they've never been able to make a decision for themselves ever.
Right.
And so, yeah, they don't know what to do. And so that's where I think starting to ask some good questions
mm-hmm.
that point to the heart of what your hope or your motive is in that conflict
mm-hmm.
could be really helpful. Because when we are trying to see things be repaired, it is not helpful. Again, this kind of goes back to that punishment picture, is it is not helpful for us to take responsibility of a problem someone else created.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we kind of need to figure out, like, how do we set up some boundaries? So in the show notes, you will see there's Epton's questions or Epton's open-ended questions. Those were provided to us by a really great friend in our church.
Yes.
All of those questions really help build intimacy with the person you're in conflict with, because the further down that list you go, the more revealing the responses will likely be. And because they're open-ended, it's not going to cause someone to feel like they're being backed into a corner. Or a better way to say that, it will help them not feel afraid like they're being backed into a corner. So some other examples we might have for that would be, hey, like, I know we see a mess here. I know you're wanting to take ownership for it. I don't like being in a mess alone. Is there anything you might want me to do?
Mm.
Or another way to phrase that could be, you know, I think you're making some really good plans. I know this is uncomfortable. We don't love the way this is turning out. But what could, or what would you maybe need to help yourself continue to move forward?
So you're kind of extending a hand, and you're not saying you're on your own.
Yeah.
But you're also creating the ability for them to choose and even invite you in a specific way for you to help.
Yeah. Which, again, if we're thinking about gospel communities,
mm-hmm.
that creates a place to repair what in the past could have been, oh, when I screw up, like, everyone hates me. Well, now it's a, oh, I've made a problem, but I see that people want to support me. And it starts to repair some, that's like, powerful. Old hurts. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you don't mind, if I can keep picking on you for,
go for it.
Hitting my car in the parking lot,
yeah.
like, a way this could look is like, hey, Johnny, like, I don't want to be like, I don't want to feel like a villain and making you do this, but like, is there a way that I can help? And you'd be like, hey, that's great. Like, what shop do you want me to take it to? Is there a shop that you prefer? Like, those are the sorts of conversations that can kind of come from that. Like, do you see another mm-hmm. way that maybe those conversations could go?
As far as?
Like how, when we ask questions that point to our heart, or like, try to get a diagnostic for, helping others take ownership.
Yeah. You're asking, do I see another way they could go? Like, basically being solution minded,
yeah.
like moving towards resolution yep. instead of the walls coming up
exactly
and not being able to move forward.
Yeah.
So part of what could happen, is that in this conversation, we could come to an impasse,
mm-hmm.
right? About this damaged car.
Yep. That's unfortunate.
we could really need to set some boundaries.
Yeah.
And so boundaries allow us to be in control of ourselves, no matter what the other person is doing, whether mm-hmm. they're getting angry, or upset. Ultimately, this allows for us to be who we are,
mm-hmm.
And to say, this is where I can go. Right. Yeah. And I'm really not able to go beyond that.
Yeah.
And maybe a pause and a stop, if you will,
mm-hmm.
So that we don't get into the things we shouldn't say.
Yeah. Because the impasse might be, well, Chris, I think you actually hit me, you know,
different perspective.
And so that boundary might be like, hey, I don't know if right now is the time to talk about this. Can we talk again in a few days?
Yeah.
Or, hey, could we bring someone else into this conversation?
Absolutely.
And sometimes that means we just kind of pause. It doesn't mean we forget. It doesn't mean we shove it under the rug. It just means we're going to talk about this again, but it's not going to be right now.
Okay.
And that's where I think coming up with an idea of, like, when can we talk about this next?
Mm-hmm.
Because I sometimes,
not like, to leave it open-ended.
Yep.
But, like, we're going to come back.
Yeah.
But I need some space. That's a beautiful boundary.
Yep. Because I just know in my life there have been moments where I just want to fix it. I just want to get into it. And sometimes the people that I've been in conflict with are like, I just need a moment. let me sleep on it. Give me an hour. Let me go get a coffee first. Hey, it's early in the morning. Mm-hmm. Like, I think best in the afternoon.
And if we're able to honor that,
yeah,
then we might actually have a better outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're able to pause,
yeah,
and extend honor in all directions that way.
Exactly. And so if the hope is, like, we create space to come back to that conversation, well, then we could hopefully have the conversation of, like, okay, like, well, who is at fault? Like, what actually happened? Let's say we come to a place where, mm-hmm, I find out, like, oh, I was on my phone, Johnny. You're right. You did see me in my car on my phone, and I hit you. You know, that could be a complete flip in the conversation. And then it's the opposite way of, like, okay, like, well, what are you going to do, Chris, to fix this? Like, and we present a solution, and you might be doubtful, and that's okay. But, like, we want to believe the best. And so by setting a boundary, you could say, like, well, when are you going to call the shop to get my car in? You know, like,
how are we going to make this happen? Yeah. This is important, right?
Yep.
But
yeah,
still extending and being gracious in that.
Yeah. So I think at this point, maybe some ways to wrap this up would kind of just bring some concluding thoughts to this. So the 5 points in this tool are: we need to choose to be honest. We need to clearly and responsibly communicate. We need to allow for people to clean up their messes.
Mm-hmm.
We need to ask questions that point to our heart, like, what do we want to see the outcome be? And then we need to learn to set boundaries to ensure that whatever solution we're trying to create comes to pass and also protects us from being more responsible for something than we ought to be. So we have a choice. We can either honor people and see God do some really incredible reparative work through gospel communities and showing people what their identity is and reminding people of honoring is the way that we build our relationships in His kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can continue to choose contempt and live in the frustration of the world that we're in.
It is a choice.
And we have to remember then, if we choose that, that contempt is always going to minimize a person's ability to make good decisions. But honor, if we choose it, will empower people to create really positive change. And the last piece there, honoring is going to require us to learn new tools to move forward and help others move forward.
That's awesome. Thanks for listening to the show as we covered community of honor. Remember, these tools and resources are for you, and they're going to stay active for you to come back to. So use them, pick them up, dive in, activate them in your life, because they will bear fruit for you.